Blog Talk Radio.
And now, broadcasting from the banks of the historic Vermilion River, amidst the rolling prairie, cornfields, and unsightly wind farms of central Illinois, it's the Rhino Hour of Power. With your host, Rick Moran, like Diogenes without a lantern. And welcome, welcome, welcome all to the Rhino Hour of Power. I'm your host, Rick Moran, and we have a little change of pace for you this evening. If you're as sick as I am hearing about gay cakes and anti-gay cakes and so forth and so on, we got a treat for you tonight. We're going to have a preview of the 2015 Major League Baseball season. Now, I know some of you young folks are out there shaking your heads and saying, baseball? That's a game for old folks. Well, I got news for you. Before you were a glint in your father's eye, young ones, baseball was king, and the players were gods. And they were not making $7 million, $8 million a year. They were making $25,000 a year and loving it. So baseball is a profoundly conservative game. And for that reason alone, I love it. But more than that, you know, you grow up with it, you eat it, you drink it, you sleep it. And we're going to have an excellent guest later, a fellow by the name of Dave Michaels, veteran sportscaster in Texas. But joining me now is my good friend and host of the Blog Talk radio show, Canto Talk, Silvio Canto. Silvio, how's it going?
Absolutely great, Rick. It is really a treat to do a baseball show with you because, you know, you and I do a lot of politics. We write a lot about politics. We do a lot of politics on the air. And I'm telling you, baseball is such a break, such a wonderful thing. And for the young people, I'm going to give them a little thing about baseball, that baseball is a lot like love. It's the only game where you don't have a clock. So just like in love, you got to finish what you start. Number two, it's the only place where you celebrate when you get home. You celebrate by going home. And number three, like in romance, it's all in your head. It's a game of it's a physical game, of course, but a lot of it is in your head. So because you have to, in a sense, if you're the pitcher, you're trying to outthink the batter, and the batter is trying to outthink the pitcher. So when young people, you know, and you're right. I mean, some young people don't seem to think baseball is fast enough, but you know, they need to give baseball a chance. I think it's a beautiful sport, and you and I, as you said, we grew up in it, and I have some great memories of baseball growing up with my dad and going to the games and all of that. So it's for me, it's in me. It's in me, and my sons like it too. So I guess at least my three sons
that's good.
I think
I think it's a generational thing. It really is. You know, of course, it was such a different game when we were young. And young, I mean, you know, before we hit our 10th birthdays. And, you know, where baseball cards are now largely bought and sold as collectibles, back
right.
then baseball cards were just cool. Remember, we put them on the spokes of our bicycles?
That's right.
Can you imagine a kid
That's
doing
right.
that today? Don't do that. That's a $25, what's his name? I don't know. Take any player.
Yeah, whatever.
That's $25 card. You can't do that.
That's right. Well, I do wish, though, Rick, that I had saved my Rocky Colavito card and that I hadn't put it in my bicycle because I think those were worth a little bit. My Rocky Colavito and my Tony Oliva and Roberto Clemente and those great heroes that I had, and Ernie Banks, Billy Williams, big, you know, No Neck Williams. Talk about a great baseball name.
Walter
remember
Williams.
Him. What was
Walter
the White
Williams.
Sox? Walter
no Neck Williams.
And what,
yep.
Yeah, and we're not talking about the conservative writer, the conservative professor, Walter Williams. We're talking about the little fellow who played
five,
for the
six,
right field.
Absolutely. It looked like he was wearing shoulder pads. He was so broad, that guy.
That's right.
And you know what he was really known for, Silvio? You know what he was really known for?
Tell me.
His hustle. When he got a walk, he would sprint down to first base. When he hit a home run, he would sprint around the bases.
That's right.
And the crowd would just go wild. You know, it was great stuff.
That's it. And the White Sox, just to date ourselves a little bit, I'm just going from memory here, but the White Sox, when he was in their outfield, they had Carlos May. Wasn't he Lee May's brother? And Pat Kelly. I used to love Pat Kelly. Remember him?
Pat Kelly, yeah. Center fielder, yeah. May had an unfortunate accident. He came up. He was a genuine power hitter. And then he won the offseason. He cut off the tip of his thumb or half of his thumb.
Right.
After that, he still was a 300 hitter, but he was much reduced in the power numbers, which was unfortunate because he was a damn good prospect when he came up. Texas Rangers have some history. You know,
not as much as the White Sox, but they have a little history, yeah. But can I just say one quick story about the White Sox? You reminded me when we're talking about Pat Kelly. I have a really good friend that I was growing up with in Wisconsin back then, and you know, we were in school. And one day he said that his dad was going to take him to a baseball game down in Comiskey, which is about a 90 to 100 mile drive from Madison. So he drove down to the game, and I said, gosh, I wish I could go with you, but we couldn't work it out. So his dad drove him down to Comiskey Park, and it turns out that he is there when Joe Horland pitches a no-hitter. So when I see him the next day in school, I said, well, you know, God, what a lucky day to go. Horland pitches a no-hitter. I think they had a doubleheader, actually, but Joe Horland either pitched in the first or the second game a no-hitter. So, I mean, every time I think of the White Sox, I remember that story.
Yeah, and people today, and they don't believe you when you say, yeah, sure, they used to schedule doubleheaders. Remember that? They used to schedule 7 or 8 doubleheaders, and, of course, then they'd have makeup games later in the year where they would have to play them. So, you know, a team might end up playing 10, 12 doubleheaders in a season, and, of course, Those were days that you can't explain to people who weren't there. You can't explain, for instance, that there used to be 8 teams in each league, and there were no playoffs. If you won 95 games like the White Sox did in 1961, I think it was 95 games, you still missed the World Series because the Yankees would won 96 that year.
It was unbelievable. It was unbelievable there. I mean, when you think of the expanded playoffs now, and I have to confess, I like the divisional setup because I think it creates more opportunities and more excitement for the fans. But, you know, that fantastic baseball show that Ken Burns put together they talk about that 1967 American League pennant race where you had 4 teams.
Boston,
they had the Red Sox, the Twins, Detroit, and the Angels. The White Sox, the Twins, the Red Sox, and the Tigers. And on Friday night, I mean, the season ends on Sunday, so you're down to 159, 160 games. And on Friday night, there's 4 teams that are mathematically, you know, possibility. The White Sox went down first. They lost
Cleveland 1-0. They lost to Cleveland 1-0 that Friday night.
Oh my gosh!
On a steal of home, I recall. Yeah.
And that eliminated them. And then the next day, they were 3, and the Red Sox and the Twins were still in it. The Tigers were still in it. The Tigers actually went out on Sunday because the Twins and the Red Sox were tied, so they broke the tie on Sunday, and the Tigers lost. My point for bringing up that story is only one of those 4 teams advanced. Today, all 4 would have advanced because they would have been wild card and divisions. And I actually do like the arrangement of the wild card and divisions. I hope that baseball doesn't go like the NHL and the NBA where half of the teams go. But the way I have it, the way they have it right now, it's actually pretty good. The way they have it right now, I like it the way they have it right now because it's about the right number of teams, and I'm okay with it right now. I think I'm okay with the setup that they have right now. I just hope that there is no more expansion, Rick. No more expansion, and they just keep it,
well, if
keep
they
it
do,
the way
it's
it is
be,
right
it,
now.
If they do, Silvio, it will probably be Mexico City. I would think
yeah.
that would be the logical first place they'd expand. And it wouldn't be too bad. I mean, it would be no more a travel burden than a West Coast team having to fly to Chicago, you know, the Midwest for a couple of series. So
right.
I wouldn't mind
or Montreal,
it. I wouldn't mind
too. No, I think that would be a very smart move because they would have a, you know, if you think of Mexico as a marketplace, I mean, the GDP of Mexico, I don't want to get too political tonight, but the GDP of Mexico is about the size of Texas. So, I mean, you have a pretty good market for one team, and they would own the entire country. Also, I think Montreal would actually be a very good place for a team. They've rebuilt that stadium. I mean, I think they have a better, from what I understand, they're making a big effort in Montreal. I think Vancouver would also be another but here's the way I would do. I wouldn't expand, but I would rearrange a couple of teams. I would move the Oakland A's to San Antonio, and then you have a great rivalry between Houston, the Rangers, and the A's in San Antonio. And then I would move a team to Montreal so that they would have a maybe the Tampa Bay team. And I say Tampa Bay and Oakland, and not a knock on those two cities because they're great fans, but they just don't have they don't seem to have the commitment for a stadium, and especially in Tampa Bay, they have got to close that stadium. That is the worst.
That is the worst. Absolutely horrible. Absolutely horrible. Amazing. Joe Madden was able to win so many games there over the years. Of course, he's gone now. Gone to the Cubs. And,
that's right.
But they're still.
Now I don't want to bring up. I don't want to bring up an embarrassing subject, Rick.
Okay.
And this, but what happened the other night at Wrigley Field? I was watching the game on TV, and I love watching games at Wrigley Field. I mean, on television, I've never been there, but they had a problem with the bathrooms. Oh, it's an embarrassing story.
Yes.
I'm not knocking the city, but it's an embarrassing story. I'm sure.
This is the Ricketts family, who are current owners of the Cubs. They're redoing the bleachers. They put a huge scoreboard and video board up that is blocking the view for about three quarters of the rooftop customers. You know, some of those dwellings, those townhouses, they're not townhouses, they're duplexes and things. Those were bought for like millions of dollars just because they could sell, you know, 50, 60 tickets to people who wanted to sit on the rooftops to watch the game. So now these poor owners, they sued Ricketts over the video board, but it didn't. They got tossed out. So, the bathroom situation is critical. They had people going in paper cups. The lines were so long.
Right. Yeah. That's a shame because it is really as I say, it's one of the classy stadiums. If not, I mean, along with Fenway Park, the two great classy stadiums or traditional stadiums. And you hate stories like that. When I heard that story, it broke my heart because opening day at Wrigley Field, it's a big deal. And so I hope they get it fixed for the game tonight or, I guess, yeah, tonight's game or this afternoon's game, whenever they're playing it. But anyway, yeah, that was a sad story.
You know, we've got our guest for this evening already queued up and ready to go. He's fired up, I bet.
Oh, my God. He is ready to go. I tell you. I run into this guy in so many weird places. I mean, on your show now, that's great.
Yeah, his name is Dave Michaels. He's a veteran sportscaster of 35 years. He's been in the Dallas-Fort Worth media market for ages. Covered professional teams as well as SMU, TCU, major bowl games, including the Cotton Bowl, which used to be one of my favorites, but has kind of fallen on hard times in recent years since they did the playoff thing.
Right.
But he's here to talk tonight as our resident expert because, let's face it, Silvio, you and I are fans. We don't do this for a living, but it's good to have Dave Michaels on board. Dave, how's it going?
Good evening. It's good to be on. I appreciate the invitation.
My pleasure.
Hey, Dave, you know, can I say something about, can I quickly say something about Dave, Rick? A couple of years ago, or no, not a couple of years ago, last year, we were doing, because we always do a Rangers preview right before the start of the season. And I made my prediction about the Rangers, and Dave said to me, that's why they call you a fan, because my prediction was very rosy, you know? So the tonight, your listeners, Rick, will get a fan perspective from me, a very much of a, you know, speaking from the heart perspective, and then my friend Dave is going to give you the logical perspective. He's going to give you the perspective of a man who really knows what he's talking about. So I think I'm delighted that he's joining us. He's a wonderful friend. I've known him for several years. He's very well established here in the area. Wonderful guy, has his own radio show. And, well, Rick, I he's just absolutely great. I'm delighted he's joining us.
Wow, the check is in the mail.
No. Rick, we don't do checks with Dave. I mean, I tell you what we do. We do cigars.
That's true.
We do cigars. We don't send checks. Yeah. We do cigars, although yeah. I have to be careful because my life insurance underwriter just heard that, and I don't want to be given a smoker rating, but that's another story. But we're ready to talk baseball.
Well, let's start talking baseball. And the first question to Dave is actually out of left field, so be prepared here. actually, I was wondering if you were a believer in sabermetrics. I mean, are you going to give us a lot of terminology like WAR and IPWXYZ and all this other?
No. My opinion on baseball is the purest. I'm still a purist of the sport. I love the game of baseball. Baseball was designed, I'm firm believe this, baseball is a designed sport where, first of all, defense controls the ball and controls the pace. It's the only sport that does so. There is no time clock in baseball. It's over when it's over. And I think that the romance of the game is still there, even though this game has tried to become more modernistic, and it has that opportunity for the modern era, if you will, to speed it up. Now we have the speed up rule. I don't know if you've seen this or not at the stadium. There's now a clock. It's like a shot clock or a play clock that's in deadway center field, so they know it 2 minutes and 25 seconds from the last out to the next pitch of the next inning. So they're trying to speed this game up. It's still going to be a three-hour game just because of the way the game is designed.
Some of those Yankee-Boston games last year went almost 4 hours, nine-inning game going 4 hours, which is a little much.
It is a little much, and for that is one of the reasons why they went to this rule of stepping out of the batter's box or having the 2 minutes and 25 seconds between innings and so on and so forth. I'm still the guy that sits around and says, if it wasn't for television, this game wouldn't be 4 hours, because television is the be-all, end-all of advertising, and they've got to get their 2.5 to 3 minutes worth of commercials inside, in between the last pitch and the first pitch of the next inning. Go ahead, Rick.
I'm just saying that another big slowdown for the game is the pitching changes. Manager takes forever. The guy takes forever coming in. He'll get his 8 warm-up pitches. And then, and I think this is directly attributable to the gargantuan salaries that are being paid and the fear of failure and all this stuff. You got the guy up there in the mound holding the ball forever before he delivers the pitch. I mean, be careful and all that, but I don't know whether that's a function of the big salaries or just the game has changed. I mean, I don't remember relief pitchers being that almighty careful in that sense when they would come in 15, 20 years ago.
I agree with you on this and the fact that, when you come to the mound as a relief pitcher, you already know the situation. I mean, you come in from the bullpen, you see it. You got a guy on first and second with one out, and the guy you're relieving couldn't get a fly out if he tried. So you know that your job is to do what? You only have one job only. Strike the guy out, yeah. Get the guy out. There's no discussion. Yet, yeah. You know, after he throws his warm-up pitches, here comes the catcher. He comes out to the mound. He has this discussion with the guy. It's like, excuse me, I think he already knows the signals that you're going to throw down. Just do
yeah.
the job.
Yeah.
Well, you know, Sylvie
but
and
I
were talking.
Standing, but I think, Rick, one thing I wanted to say, Dave and Rick, is that I think that what has really added the 20 or 30 minutes to the game, and that's what we're talking about, because if you go back to, let's say, the 60s and 70s, early 80s, the games were like 2 minutes, 30 seconds. That was the average. Now it's 3 minutes. I think what has added that 20 or 30 minutes extra is the batters stepping out. And, Nolan Ryan was on radio not long ago, or a few years ago, and he was saying that he didn't like that when batters would do that to him, but they didn't do it to Ryan because he sent you a message like saying, hey, get in the box.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
And the message was
99
about
under the chin.
Yeah, under the chin.
Right under
so,
the chin.
Yeah, so that was a very powerful telegram, as they like to say. And so I think a little bit of it is that the batter's stepping out, they fix their gloves. And I think if the umpire put a little discipline in the game in that sense, I think these 20 or 25 minutes can be made up fairly quickly. Now, I'm glad they do have that clock, only in the sense that I think that, you know, it's good to have a discipline between innings, so that you don't these things don't drag on. But I really think the culprit is these batters standing out of the box. That's what I think the culprit is. Dave, you've seen a lot of games. Would you agree with that?
Mark Hargrove comes to mind. The human rain delay.
Right.
Human rain delay.
Yeah,
1974. 1974, he would step out every time, adjust the glove, adjust the helmet, adjust his pants, adjust the shirt, adjust the shoes, adjust everything. Then he'd get back in the box.
And then he'd do his thumb. Remember, he did the little thing on his
thumb.
He had that little,
that's right.
Yeah. But here's the difference, Dave. Here's the difference with Mike Hargrove. He was a 300 hitter. So, I mean, you could, you know.
Oh, so what
are you
saying?
Difference,
the guy hitting 223 can't do that?
Well, I would
say. Well, he's making
$3 million
bucks. You know, what can you say? He's
yeah,
making $3 million at 223, you know.
But Mark Hargrove was standing up there doing his technique. He was looking around saying, let's see, do I put the ball between the center fielder and the right fielder? He had that beautiful magic with his bat that he could put the ball anywhere he wanted to. He was a great – by the way, Dave, did Hargrove play his whole career with the Rangers? I think so.
No.
Or did he go to
no.
Cleveland?
He went to Cleveland, played for the Indians.
Cleveland, yeah. That sounds familiar, yeah.
Okay.
Well,
we're all
of a certain age here. I think I'm the oldest. I'm the senior member of this crew.
No, I don't think so, Rick. I think all of us are. Let's just say we were all born when Eisenhower was president.
Yeah. Okay. That's good.
That's a good way to put it.
That puts us in the same era then. And
right.
It was the golden age of baseball, the 1960s and early 1970s, when it's hard to explain. Sylvie and I were talking about this, Dave. It's hard to explain to younger, even younger baseball fans, how baseball captured the attention of the country in the summer and especially in the fall. The business world would stop during the World Series. Of course, they didn't have night games. All the World Series games used to be played during the day. So you'd have people bringing transistor radios to school. You had them bring small television sets to work. Or if your team was in the World Series, you'd just as likely play hooky and go watch them. And of course,
yeah,
it was powder.
But you could go play hooky because the ticket didn't cost an arm and a leg.
Right. That's right. That's right.
I mean, I'm serious. If you wanted to sit in the outfield as a youngster, you could get in for a dollar.
Right.
In the 60s.
Well, in
cents.
Milwaukee,
I mean,
Dave.
50 cents.
I grew up in Texas where we didn't get baseball until 72 because we had to wait till the Senators got ran out of Washington and moved to Texas, moved to Arlington. But growing up, and Rick, you're absolutely correct when you said it was a different era, because I remember growing up, my dad was a Yankee fan. My dad was from New York. He was a Yankee. My bedtime stories when I was very young, I went to sleep listening to stories of Babe Ruth and Lou Gehrig and Joe DiMaggio and Moose Caron and Mickey Mantle. In fact, I got a chance to meet Mickey Mantle in 74. It's a great story, and I'll tell it to you later. But, you know, there's this romance of the game that you're so correct in saying, because in the 60s, baseball was on the radio. And baseball is really a game that radio has embraced because of that time frame that you have between pitches. You have that opportunity to paint the picture and to use the drama that's around the game. You can't do that in television because television is about a picture. In television, you only get three elements. You get a pitcher, a catcher, and a batter. That's it. You know, you don't see the outfield. You don't see what's going on unless they do a split screen or they do a wide angle. In radio, that announcer is giving you all of that. And Vin Scully said it best. I wish I had said it before, mm-hmm. but unfortunately he said it before anybody else did. Baseball is nothing more than a story interrupted by a game.
Yes. So true.
That's very
so
good.
So true.
Yeah.
No, that is so true. And you were talking about growing up in baseball. If I could just get this one in very quickly, Dave. I remember 1968, the Tigers were in the World Series. They were playing the Cardinals.
Yeah,
yeah,
I watched that
when
I was in school.
So did I. That's what I was going to relate. You know, we have
that was Mickey Lolich's.
Mickey Lolich won three games.
Jim North. He won 31 during the regular season. Last pitcher to win 30 games.
That's it.
Yeah,
and,
I'm sorry, I just had to throw that in there.
No.
Bob Gibson and Luke Rock.
That's it.
On the other guy. Yeah.
I just remember that particular series being in school, and we had this great teacher who let us watch Game 6 and Game 7 because, as you know, the Cardinals were up 3-1, and everybody thought the Cardinals were going to repeat as World Series champs, and the Tigers had that great comeback, winning three in a row. Jim Northrup hitting a bases-loaded triple, that kind of thing.
Right.
And it was just such an exciting series to watch. And I make the argument, guys, that one of the reasons that so many young people, I'm going to use my three sons as an example here. My three sons, they were born in 87. That sounds like a TV show, doesn't it, my three sons? But
yeah.
It sounds like it, doesn't it? But our three sons, I'll put it that way, were born in 87, 88, and 90. 87, 88, 90. So when they were coming of age, starting to follow television, late 90s. They were huge fans of Jeter and the Yankees because they were dominating baseball at that time. And they never got to see the last out of the World Series because it was at midnight. And I remember many times, you know, watching the game really late at night, sometimes in bed watching the game, saying to myself, what a tragedy. You have millions of young kids in the country who are not staying up to watch this game because it's so late. And I think that one of the reasons that a lot of kids are disconnected is because they don't have that passion of watching a postseason game, a game seven, or, catching the last out and the celebration that happens. Now, the NFL does it right. They start the football game at 5 o'clock. So it's over by 8:30, 9 o'clock, so the kids can see the celebration. I think that's the right way to do it. And I've argued for years they ought to bring back more afternoon baseball. And also, to get the kids in the game more, bring down the prices. Make it so cheap so that a family of five can go to the game and these kids can fall in love with baseball like we did. I mean, we fell in love, Dave. We were relating this before you came in. I fell in love with baseball because my dad took us to a game every Sunday afternoon. And my brother and I would go to the games. This was in Cuba and then later in Wisconsin. We go to the game. So we were in love with the game because of that. And I think a lot of kids today don't have that love because they don't get to see it like we did. And so I just wanted to get that in, guys.
Yeah.
I totally, absolutely agree with you.
Yeah, and we could spend an entire show talking about what happened to baseball, why it has fallen so far in popularity, and, you can talk about the saturation, the overexposure. Every single game is on television now. When we were kids, we had 80 White Sox games and 80 Cubs games to watch, and the rest of the time you had to listen on the radio. Which, you know, and how many times did I go to sleep or get into bed listening to a West Coast game, listen to Bob Elson, Hall of Fame broadcaster, on the radio? giving the play-by-play at midnight or thereabouts, close to midnight.
Sure.
You know, I think the overexposure is probably the most important reason baseball has fallen. And football is getting that way now, and I think football is in for a fall, too, the way things are going there. They're not filling up the stadiums anymore. TV ratings are dropping. It looks bad for professional football from where I'm standing, so I don't know.
Yep. Yeah, they're still making money because...
Go ahead, Dave.
I wanted to say something. Go ahead.
Football is still making their money because of their advertising revenue. So remember, football is not going to go anywhere anytime real soon, and it's a monster of a promotion. Baseball, on the other hand, they are losing the attraction of the – I mean, if you notice that the majority of the players in Major League Baseball right now are Latino or Asian. If you look at rosters, they're mainly Latino players or Asian players. You know, there's not that many Caucasian players. There's certainly not that many African-American players. And the reason being is because of what you just said. There is no more attraction to the game. The generation today finds the game boring because that's all they know, because it has been so overly saturated with every television station out there, and every market has their own, you know. Like here in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, we get the Rangers. We get 162 games. If you're in Houston, you get the Astros, 162 games. Same in Chicago.
Wow.
WGN used to be the only station to carry the Cubs. Not
right.
More.
That's right.
No.
We used to get WGN down here.
They now have three stations carrying the Cubs. WLS, the ABC affiliate, is carrying 25 games this year. Because next year, the WGN contract runs out, and it doesn't look like they're going to renew it. 58 years carrying the Cubs, and it looks like they're out of business next year. Very sad.
And, again, it goes back to the lack of tradition carrying on. You know, baseball is nothing but tradition. The whole game
is
based on tradition. But in the modern era, it is not the traditions that we're so used to having. In the case in point with the Chicago area, WGN. You mentioned those three call letters, immediately it's CUBS.
Right.
I mean, you immediately think Cubs. You immediately think Harry Carey.
Oh, yeah.
But that tradition is going to go by the wayside. You know, we're growing up, it was the NBC game of the week. It was every Saturday afternoon I get to watch Joe Garagiola and Tony Kubek talking about the Yankees versus the world. Because it was always a Yankee game against somebody that we didn't really care about.
That's right.
Yeah,
well, one thing I wanted to say about, very quickly, I wanted to say something about the ratings. I read this the other day, and that the first game of the World Series attracted 12 million people, which is, you know, not what they were expecting. But then in the same paragraph, a television executive said, you know, 12 million people in this situation right now, with as many channels, as many options as people have, it's not that bad. 12 million is actually a pretty good number for a television program in this day and age. Another tradition that baseball forgot, and it's a shame, and I hate that it went away, is that the first game was always played in Cincinnati. Remember that. The first pitch would always be thrown in Cincinnati, and Cincinnati would start, the first pitch, I never forget, you know, the hearing on the radio, the baseball season started today in Cincinnati. And the first pitch would always be thrown in Cincinnati because of the tradition that was the first professional team. Now, maybe somebody listening out there says, who cares about that? I care about that because, as Dave was saying, baseball is tradition.
And it changed in 2000.
Yeah.
That tradition changed in 2000. When the new millennium started, Bud Selig said, with a new millennium becomes new tradition. And Cincinnati got shut out of that new tradition.
Well, that's a shame because I used to love that.
I'll tell you one tradition that we all enjoyed growing up, and that is it wasn't good for the ball players to be tied to one team, to be a slave to one owner, so to speak. But year to year, I could tell you the starting lineups for all eight American League teams. I could tell you the starting lineups for probably five or six National League teams. We knew who the players were. We knew what they could do, which is why when you got baseball cards, Everybody got him, don't got him. And we all knew, maybe not the batting averages and the home runs and runs driven in, but we knew who the power hitters were. We knew who were the singles hitters. We knew who were the good pitchers. You knew all this, and you knew where they played, and that was a tradition. Well, of course, free agency comes along, and now you can have a 80% turnover in a lineup from year to year. And, you know, I'm not a big follower of the hot stove league, so I'm not immersed in the sport as I used to be. But, you know, it's just you have to find out now as the season goes on. Oh, he's on the Red Sox now? Oh, wow. When did that happen?
Right. Exactly. That is true. I mean, there used to be a lot more continuity, and I like that. Now, you're right. I mean, that the players sort of got the bum deal when they didn't have any options. I mean, the truth of the matter is they were underpaid for years. When the owners were running the show, I mean, they were literally underpaid. The owners were determining their salaries. Now, the players were not complaining, but they weren't really maximizing their potential. But I think right now there's too much turnover. And in baseball, there's a reporter here in the Dallas area, in the Dallas Morning News, who's also on ESPN, Tim Collishaw. And he suggested one time that baseball ought to have a rule where the player, if you bring up a star, every effort should be made by the league, unless you've got some real problems, to keep them there. So, for example, the Cubs have this young man, Sterling Castro, who they're bringing up. Every effort should be made to keep him in Chicago and give him an opportunity to have a career there so that he becomes the face of the team, like, you know, the first baseman Rizzo or whatever. So I think every effort should be made to do that. But again, I know money speaks very loudly.
Yeah, and some players have become hobos and have, you know, just been kind of a rent-a-player for a year or two for a particular team. Then they move on to the next team that can use a strong right-handed bat or something. I'm not convinced it's good for baseball. I'm not saying that the reserve clause was a good thing, but it did, I think, as far as fans are concerned, it established a kind of, as Silvio says, a continuity that was both comforting and, got you excited about the team year to year. So, and of course, the ownership has changed, Dave. You used to have these gentlemen sportsmen like Phil Wrigley and Yawkey in Boston, and even Steinbrenner might have been the last of the gentlemen. Well, now you have giant corporations who own these teams.
Well,
they're bean counters. They'll be competitive until September. That's their goal. Be competitive until September, so they fill up the stands the first three quarters of the year.
Partly correct. The other side of that also is with corporate America and corporations owning teams, you get into the bottom line, and then you get the he's only as good as his last outing. I mean, we've seen that. Free agency, I don't disagree, has pretty much I'm not going to say ruined the game, but it definitely has dampened it because these players are not part of the fabric of that team anymore. A prime example here in the Texas area, Mike Young was a face of the team.
Oh, yes.
Well, and then his contract ended, and they had to release him. Well, he gets picked up by the Phillies, and he goes to the Dodgers, and he's out of baseball. Pudge Rodriguez, another fine example. You know, when they brought in A-Rod on this team, money got real tight. Tom Hicks made the biggest mistake of all times, and because of that one mistake, look what's going on in Miami and look what else is happening in Major League Baseball when you're paying $25, $26, $27 million a year over a 10-year period of time. You know, A-Rod made $25 million a year for 10 years at $250 million, $250 million. Well, what does that do to your team? Well, it tore the fabric of the team in the clubhouse. I was there. I watched it. I watched how A-Rod was a cancer, if you will, not because he was a bad teammate. It's because his money drove a wedge in that clubhouse. You spend that kind of cash, you expect the World Series to be coming in your way down the red carpet. But it also took one of the key players away from that team because they could no longer afford him. Pedro Rodriguez's contract was coming up. There was no more money to be given. There was nothing left
right.
in the tank to give Pudge. So Pudge leaves and he goes to the Marlins. And what does he do there? Helps them win a World Series. Son of a gun. Think about
right.
how that worked out.
Right. Well, also Rafi Palmeiro too. They
well,
could have kept him. I think they could have kept him if I mean that was another consequence of the A-Rod deal. I don't want to get too much into the Rangers, but that was another consequence of it that they didn't have money for Rafi, and
well,
you know.
And here's the other side of that, Sylvia, is when they built that ball yard in Arlington, the right field porch that so looks so much like Tiger Stadium, because if you look at the way the ballpark is designed, by the way, there's bits and pieces of famous ballparks put within the Arlington, or the, what do they call it now, Globe Life Park. There's little bits and pieces of every Wrigley Field's even part of it. So is Yankee Stadium and Wrigley, and not Wrigley, but Fenway Park. They're all represented in this ball yard. And they built this right field porch for Rafael Palmeiro and that sweet swing of his from the left side
That's
of the plate.
Right.
But
That's right.
guess what happened? They couldn't afford him. So what do? They bring in Will Clark, left-handed hitter. Couldn't do nearly what Rafael could do. But he was still one of those guys that, you know, he's a – I mean, he was a magnet.
He was –
Will Clark can
I
love
Will Clark was great. He was great. I will tell you something. Every time – when he's healthy, Josh Hamilton hits a fly ball in Angel Stadium, I bet he remembers that porch because those fly balls would have gone out here and they're long outs in Angel Stadium or whatever. But that was another player who was perfectly designed for this park. This is a great park if you're a left-handed hitter, but we're probably talking too much Rangers baseball, Rick. That's what happens with us.
Yeah, right. Well, let's move on because we only got 20 minutes left here, and I did want to get a little bit of a thumbnail sketch previews of the divisions, and maybe we can joke around and make some predictions for the playoffs and the World Series. Dave, I want to start with the National League. I know something about a few of the teams in the National League, of course the Cubs, but I read a lot about the Washington Nationals. And they seem to be, and we can start with the NL East, they seem to be the class of that division, head and shoulders above just about any other team.
Well, now that Atlanta has pretty much done a fire sale and gotten rid of a couple of good key players, Atlanta was being looked at. The Mets are still being touted as a division forefront. But I like the Nationals. I like what they have. I think Bryce is going to be one of those type of guys that's just going to be a catalyst for that team. And the pitching staff, as long as they – and here's that term that you're going to hear almost with every team. As long as the pitching staff stays healthy for the entire season, you got a pretty good opportunity for the Nationals to be leading that National League East and do it with, I would say, a pretty good distance between the second-place team. But it all goes back to they've got the bats, they've got the arms. Atlanta, they sold the farm. The New York Mets, I think, are going to be my wild card coming out of the East. Miami and Philadelphia are going to be fighting to see who can't stay out of the cellar. And here's another thing with Miami. They put that big contract out there, and it's like, that's not going to bring you anything except a headache.
No. Right. I mean, that's what, a third of their payroll is Stanton, who's a great player, but I think they overpaid.
Yeah.
I really do. I think you're right.
Yeah, and the Phillies, God bless them, who were so good just a few years ago, have really, really screwed it up. I mean, their front office has really, really screwed up. They failed to sign some players. They traded away prospects that turned into stars. They might be the worst team in the National League, in my opinion.
Right,
and it wasn't that long ago they were fighting for the playoffs and going to the World Series. So
didn't Cliff Lee wanted to go there because he thought he had a better shot of getting into the series and with the Rangers. And it turns out the following year the Rangers are in the series, and Cliff Lee is out of the playoffs in the first round. You know, so the Phillies are. I mean, I have a good friend in Philadelphia who's a baseball coach, and they are very angry with the Phillies because they feel like. It's a team that they let the team get old, and they're going to have a hard time moving some of those guys. Although I think Cliff Lee and Hamels will probably be gone by July, but that's a tough organization. They're not going to go anywhere.
Yeah. Moving on to the
Nationals. Also, I picked the Nationals to win in the East also, yeah.
Yeah, they got a great rotation. They've got an excellent bullpen.
Fantastic.
They've got power, speed, defense. I mean, I'd put them, in fact, in the World Series, but we'll come to that later. Moving on to the NL Central, you have my beloved Chicago Cubs. They are not beloved. I hate the Cubs. I'm a White Sox fan. I've always hated the Cubs. So anything bad that happens to them, I celebrate. But in the Central, Dave, you have two teams who are probably battling out down to the last week or later, the Cardinals and the Milwaukee Brewers, who all of a sudden have found a team where they can keep some good players. They had some great young players a few years ago who have really blossomed. Of course, Andrew McCutchen is a most valuable player candidate every year. So you have these two teams, good rivals, who will probably be battling out to the end of the season. What do you think there?
Well, when you talk about the National League Central, you cannot mention it without mentioning the Cardinals as a forefront because of just they reload and they keep going and they do a very good job every year in and year out. However, I like the Pirates. I like the Pirates to repeat. I like the Pirates to actually win the Central. And I like the Pirates to kind of keep everybody else at bay. I don't think there's going to be a wild card coming out of the Central Division. I think that it's going to be the Pirates leading that one by themselves with the Cardinals and the Reds nipping at their heels. But I think the Pirates will win that one going away.
Yeah. You really think so, huh?
Yeah.
Do you think their bullpen's going to hold up? You think their bullpen's going to hold up?
I think their bullpen. Here's the deal about the Pirates. Their farm system is good enough that if something should happen to the bullpen, they still got arms coming up out of AAA. So don't count them out. Their AAA farm system is still good, and they still got a lot of young arms out there. And that's the neat thing about bringing guys up into the season because there's no book on the pitcher. You don't know what he's throwing at you. So the first time through that rotation, he's going to be throwing lights out because those batters can't second guess it. Now, these are probably only good for one round. But that's okay. They got enough arms coming up from the farm system. They can probably do this by committee.
Yeah. And then moving out west, Silvio, we've got probably the most improved team in baseball, the San Diego Padres.
Yes.
But going up against a Dodgers team that is just, I think it's the highest payroll in Major League history,
mm-hmm.
if I'm not mistaken.
Right.
Talk about the west there, Dave.
The West, I can take that on a dartboard and throw darts at it and still not get it right. Because I think I agree with you. I think San Diego is probably the best improved team right now, and it's showing even more so. The Dodgers, the Giants are going to be dogfighting each other throughout the year, and the one that's going to sneak up and nip everybody in the butt is going to be the Arizona Diamondbacks because they can play spoiler. And that's, I think, what their role is going to be. So
yeah, right.
who I have coming winning out of this one, I'm picking the Giants with the San Diego Padres being the wild card.
Right.
Yeah.
The only thing the Giants have done is win three out of the last five series, and one of these days they're going to get some respect. I mean, this is a team that nobody ever picks, but all they do is win the World Series. I think if you're just looking at it on paper, I was thinking San Diego and Washington for the National League Championship Series. But San Diego has not played together, and you don't know how all these new players are going to work out. But on paper, they look very solid. But I agree with Dave. I'm putting my money on the Giants this year because all they've done is win three out of five series. Now, the only drawback for the Giants is this is not an election year, and they always win on an election year. So that's the only thing.
Yeah. I didn't say they would win the series. I said they win the West.
Okay, but it's 2010, 2012, and 2014. I think there's a little pattern developing there, guys. So I think the Giants will win the World Series in 2016.
There you go.
Yeah, and the Yankees always win when the stock market goes up a certain percentage or something. I don't know.
Right, exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, right.
Speaking of the Yankees. speaking of the Yankees, let's move on to the AL East. Always a dogfight there. You've got Boston and New York and Baltimore and Tampa Bay all, you know, projecting out pretty well. And Toronto, of course, is a much improved team. They were just absolutely devastated by injuries last year. But they have that same team back. And, of course, when you got Encarnacion, Encarnacion and Bautista in the same lineup, you're going to get a lot of home runs. You know that for sure. Of course, Bautista was hurt much of the year. Encarnacion was slowed down a lot. So Toronto's going to be good, but are they going to be good enough to beat a much improved Boston team and a Tampa Bay team that always seems to be competitive regardless of who's on the field?
I looked at the East and I liked what I saw with Boston in the offseason. Tampa, as you mentioned, always improved, always there. They have been for the last several years in the playoffs. Baltimore to me is still Baltimore, and the Yankees just ain't going to make it. And Toronto is still going to be looking up at everybody else. So, I mean, I'm hanging on with my Boston Red Sox.
What's not to like about Baltimore, just out of curiosity? They have power.
Baltimore,
they've got pitching.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
They're injury prone. And remember, they lost one of the major bats from last year because now he's playing for the Mariners, and that's Nelson Cruz.
Right.
Yes.
So you
and for
lost
some
right
of the listeners, for some of the listeners who don't.
Go ahead. Sorry.
I was going to say, Dave, for the listeners who don't know who Nelson Cruz is, he dropped the fly ball that would have won the Rangers the World Series. So that's
so
who he
is. You didn't have to bring that up.
You didn't have to bring that up. I just wanted to mention.
He was also suspended for 50 games, I think.
Right.
You didn't have to bring that up either.
Yeah, we have a little bit of a Nelson Cruz problem here.
But last year he hit 37 home runs. So now the Baltimore Orioles don't have that 37 home run power anymore.
Right. That's true. That's true.
You know, you take that out of the lineup, that changes the whole dichotomy of what you've got in the clubhouse too. I like, and believe me, I'm a Nelson Cruz fan. I like Nelson Cruz. He's a nice kid.
I was joking.
He got caught up in some bad stuff, and you know, he's paid his dues and he's back playing. But he's in the American League West, which I ain't real happy about. But that's another story because he's playing for the Mariners.
But
I think the Red Sox win it. Coming out of the East, you're going to have a wild card. I watched for Tampa Bay, and it's a dogfight between them and the Orioles. That's gonna be your dogfight for that position, for that wild card.
Yeah, I would have to agree with that. Yes.
Yeah, I think that's a good pick. Yeah.
The Central Division. This is interesting. The Tigers, over the last 2 years, have lost an extraordinary amount of talent. Justin Verlander, their former Cy Young Award winner, is on the disabled list to start the season. They lost Matt Scherzer to the Nationals. He was a Cy Young Award winner too. But yet because the division is so weak, and it is weak, they will probably end up winning it again. What do you think?
I'm actually picking the Royals. I think the Royals got a taste of it last year. They want to get back to it. I think they worked extremely. I watched them in Surprise, Arizona, you know, because they share the facility with the Rangers. What I saw in Royals uniform, I like what I see. I like the attitude that they're giving. They want to get back to the series. They got a taste of it. So I think that the Central Division is theirs to lose. Detroit's on their heels, so I'm picking the Royals to win it, Detroit being right there on their heels. The White Sox, the Indians, and the Twins, they can fight to see who's not going to finish last.
Yeah.
Take your pick on
that. True.
Yeah.
Although I think the Indians and the White Sox will probably end up with winning records, which would be a feat for the White Sox, who've had losing records the last 3 years, I think. And the Indians, who have lost so much talent over the years, but they're getting some of it back. They had a good farm system. They had a good offseason and signing a few players. Of course, they have the current Cy Young Award winner, Corey Kluber. So So you know, you've got a good mix of veterans and young players on that team, but they just don't have the horses, the starting pitchers, and their bullpen has a few holes. That's unfortunate. But I don't know. And you know, I've seen the Royals for years. Last year they overcame a few things and were able to win, but I just don't know with them. They lost James Shields, their ace, and that's never a good thing for a team. So we'll have to see how that works out. Moving on to the AL West. An interesting division, probably the most interesting in baseball. You had the Seattle Mariners, who went out and spent something like $150 million over the last 2 years to pick up Robinson Cano. They've already had, of course, one of the game's dominant pitchers, Felix Hernandez. But they also, as Silvio mentioned, picked up Nelson Cruz as a DH, and that's what they were missing last year. They had the pitching last year, but they had the worst offense in the American League. Well, now they've got Cruz, they've got Cano. Do they have enough to take it all from Los Angeles or the Anaheim Angels? Because they certainly are going to be challenged by the Angels. And the Oakland A's, and maybe even the Texas Rangers. But do they have enough to take it all? That's the question.
Well, to explain the Angels right now, one name and one name only is going to actually cause the demise of the Angels, and that's Josh Hamilton. Because of what's recently happened with Major League Baseball and the arbitration that, you know, didn't suspend him, that's going to cause a rift in that clubhouse. And when you have a rift like that in the clubhouse, I mean, we saw it here in North Texas with him his last season with the Rangers when he dropped the ball in Oakland, and then you know basically didn't show up for the one game playoff against the Orioles. I got a strange feeling you might see that same Josh Hamilton again, this time wearing Angels uniform and not a Ranger uniform. So I don't think the Angels are the team you really got to worry about. I think you do have to worry about the A's. Seattle, I agree with you, is reloaded, but if the Rangers can somehow, after last night's debacle, pull their head out, I think they might be able to play for this division. I felt like so much like Harry Doyle last night from Major League. They got one hit.
I know.
And for those of you that know the line, I'm not going to say it, but you know what I'm thinking.
That's right. I fell asleep. Oh, it was a no-hitter. There was a no-hitter, and ESPN does a flash that Sonny Gray is pitching a no-hitter against the Rangers, and I said, oh, my gosh. No,
yeah,
please don't do a no-hitter. Don't do a no-hitter. But I mean, that was rough last night, but that's the beauty of baseball. There's always Kobe Lewis tonight, Rick. So Kobe Lewis will make up for it.
I'm glad to hear that.
My prediction for the West, though, is I still think the A's is the team to beat. I think it's going to be a fight between the Rangers and the Mariners. You can even throw the Astros in there just for good measure to be a spoiler to fight for that third slot. However, as far as the wild card, and I told Silvio this a week ago, I still think the Rangers are going to get the wild card out of that. I think they'll finish second, and I think they come out as the wild card.
I agree.
Okay,
I predicted 85 wins for the Rangers. I think, Dave, you say 90. But, I mean, if the Rangers are healthy and they look like they're healthy, I think they're a good team.
I mean, the only thing, the only component they're missing is Yu Darvish. So you started the season without him. So you have to work around that because had he gone into the season and we lost him, say, in June or July, then you could throw your arms up and throw the white flag and say, well, you surrender. But because he never made it out of spring training, he's not going to be a part of the team at all. You have to rethink that, and I think John Daniels has done that and thinking that we got to start bringing the guys up from the – here's another system where you have to work with the farm system. You got to work with your AA and your AAA teams to bring fresh arms into the team, and you start winning with that. Ron Washington did it in 2010. I think it can happen again in 2015.
Right. And well, just one quick note. Sports Illustrated has the Rangers and the Cubs as the two best farm systems, and I do believe that the farm system is very good, and I think it's going to be the big help for the Rangers this year. They have a lot of young pitchers, and in speaking of young Rangers from the farm system, two of them are playing for the Cubs. I saw them the other night. Grimm, the pitcher, and Holt, the third baseman. Those were two of our better prospects a few years ago, and we have a bunch of them in the farm system. So I agree with Dave. I'm very optimistic about the Rangers, even though last night it was rough. It was very rough.
Well, let's. I got 2 minutes left here, guys. So I did want to get to the who's going to be in the league championship series from each league. And that means then who's going to win the World Series. We'll each give our guesses. My guess for the National League will be St. Louis and Washington in the league championship series. For the American League, let's go with the Angels and the wild card team, Detroit, in the American League. Winner of the World Series, Angels. Detroit is going to win the World Series this year. Silvio, you're up.
Well, it's not an election year, so therefore I'm not picking the Giants. Maybe I should. But I'm picking Washington and San Diego in the National League. Because San Diego has really improved itself. And if they can come together, I think they've got a chance San Diego will win that series. In the American League, I've got Kansas City and the A's in the final, and I'm picking Kansas City. So it'll be Kansas City and San Diego, and the commissioner is going to worry about ratings if that happens.
Yeah, right. Absolutely. Dave, you're the anchor man here. You go ahead and finish it off.
I'm out of the National League. I got the Washington Nationals going up against the St. Louis Cardinals. The Nationals win that one. They go to the series, but they're going to be facing a tough team because I think it's going to be the Kansas City Royals going up against the Oakland A's for the championship. And I think I'm going to take Kansas City going against the Nationals. Nationals win their first title.
All right.
The first title for Washington, D.C. ever, because I don't think the Senators ever won one, did they? I don't think so.
No, they were in the
series. At any rate,
since
this
Walter
was fun,
Johnson,
guys. I'm glad we do. Maybe we'll do a World Series preview in October. So maybe we'll have you back then. Yeah. Back to politics next week, Silvio.
Okay, all right. That's right. Back to the ugly stuff next week. It's the fun stuff tonight. Thank you so much, Rick.
I want to thank our guest tonight, Dave Michaels. And my co-host, the very reliable and wonderful Silvio Canto. Silvio, thanks a lot.
Thank you so much. My pleasure, my friend. It's always a great honor to be on your show, and you do a great job. I'm sure the audience knows you're the blog editor at American Thinker, and you guys do a fabulous job.
Thank you, sir. So join me again next week, same time. Oh, my pleasure, Dave, and same time next week. Bye-bye.